This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, so we are a sports talk show, but sometimes politics comes into sports, does it not?
Unfortunately, yes.
Robert is nodding his head as well.
And the NFL owners are going to be talking about that this week at their spring meetings.
NFL owners, that's their matter, but we've got our own matter to deal with. And that is what has surfaced between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. This is a big fight coming up. So, a little backstory, as most of you may know, Joe Biden has said that the way Donald Trump speaks about women, he'd like to take him out to the woodshed effectively and get into a fight with him, beat him up. Donald Trump said, bring it on. And so these two are now bantering back and forth in the public that they will go to war. Now, my question, first of all, I don't know that this has been set up, but is it going to be MMA, boxing, or wrestling? Has that been clear to all of you? Robert, do you have anything to help here?
This is my first time actually hearing about
this. Oh, you don't know about the big fight?
I didn't know about the big fight.
Well, breaking news.
And I will say it will be a boxing match if it had to go down that way.
Well, wrestling legend Terry Funk has said he'd like to get in the ring with him, but I don't...
That's how it all started.
Okay.
Was... this wrestling legend, you're right, Terry Funk. So this is why I'm thinking it might be a wrestling match, because he said, I would love to get in the ring with Biden and Trump.
Yes.
And then Bovada has started taking bets on this prospective political. Well, then they're calling it a boxing match. So, Robert, you're right. It is a boxing match.
Well, let's just ask the question then. If the odds are being set, who should be the favorite in this matchup? These are two people over 70 years old. Biden looks to be in better shape.
I'm going for Joe, Robert.
Yeah, I'm going for Joe Biden.
Because I like his pregame trash talk. He says if I were in high school, I would take him behind the gym and beat the H out of him. I love that. That's fiery.
It's fiery. I guess the one thing that would concern me about fighting Trump is I don't know if he'll play by the rules.
Yeah, he won't.
Gee, what would give you that thought? But Trump says that Biden is weak. He'd go down fast and hard, crying all the way.
All right, place your bets. The battle
is
to come.
This is WWE.
You heard about it here first. This is sports talk all of a sudden. All right, when we come back, we are going to look at the women of the week. We've got four women we're going to highlight. Perhaps a new feature here on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Okay, we have this award-winning feature, the much-anticipated...
The preview.
Down in the last segment of our second hour, we do the He Said, She Said segment. That comes later. I know people are waiting on that, but we've got... a special feature this week. I think it's a one-week-only feature, but it is the Woman of the Week feature. And I'm going to run off four names, and then we're going to look at why each of them might be a candidate to be the Woman of the Week. Okay?
Got it.
By the way, I had your name on here, and I had to scratch it off. It always begins with Carla.
I never make the cut.
No, the Monday Night Delight is not going to be on the list today.
Darn.
But it's a good list. Here they come. Let me run through the names quickly. Sister Jean.
Okay, well, certainly I cannot be on any list with America's Favorite Nun.
Okay.
So I'm okay with that.
America's Favorite Nun and you are in different lists, but next to her I'm putting Stormy Daniels.
Couldn't share that list either, so this is so far
best
so
we
good.
Keep you away from that. Michelle Beadle, who will be a co-host with Mike Greenberg. On
and Jalen Rose.
On Jalen Rose, and doing that on TV, on ESPN, and... that's a big, big role with big, big, big money she's going to make.
Yeah.
And then Brenda Tracy, who, well, you should describe. She's been an outspoken person defending women who have been treated poorly in sports.
Yeah, she's amazing. She's doing great things. Can't wait to talk about her.
All right. Well, there they are, the four candidates for Women of the Week. Robert is nodding his head. He's taking this one very seriously.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with Stormy Daniels is a question mark for me.
What?
But
speaking of, I think the boss just threw in a spicy one.
Yeah,
I
could see that. I can see that. But she did speak out and state her piece about Donald Trump. But I take her out. I like Sister Jean, Michelle Beadle, and Brenda Tracy.
So you say the field of four has now gone to three. Stormy Daniels does not make the cut. Now that's your view, Robert. Carla, are you on board with that? You want to eliminate Stormy from this conversation?
Stormy's just in a different way. I have to say, I did watch 60 Minutes last night.
Yes.
I was surprisingly really impressed with her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, she is legitimately making a living. It's not what I would choose to do or don't want any of my daughters necessarily doing it. But she is a businesswoman. She is legal, doing things legally. And she was very convincing last night. I thought she was calm. She was intelligent. I was really surprised. What'd you think?
Well, I would say there were two funny observations that came out in the Gow household last night in anticipation of her coming on 60 Minutes. The first was, it's the only point in history I could declare out loud in front of my wife, hey, I'm going to go turn on the monitor and look at a porn film, porn star. I mean, I could say, I'm going to go see a porn star, and it was okay.
Right. She gave you the go-ahead.
She gave me the go-ahead. True. In fact, she sat down and watched next to me. So together we watched the porn star with our children, I might add. My son was there. That's a first time in history in the Gow house.
It might be the last. So yeah,
I have no doubt it's the last. I mean, the second observation, you mentioned that what she does is legal. There was also this funny conversation that prostitution is illegal in the United States, but making a porn film is legal.
Yeah, I mean, her acting, producing career.
Right. So she's in the porn business, and what she does is legal. Yet being a prostitute is not legal. So it's almost as if a prostitute, when the police come barging in, when they're trying to entrap her, she ought to just say, oh, no, there's actually a video camera over there, so it must be legit. We're not actually doing prostitution. This is just a porn film. We're acting. So,
maybe that is her escape.
But anyway, those are the observations. I'm going to eliminate, based on Robert's recommendation, we're going to take Stormy Daniels off the list of the Woman of the Week. Now we have Sister Jean. Make the case for Sister Jean. I sense you have a soft spot in your heart for her.
I do have a soft spot for Sister Jean, and I know not to mess with someone with a direct line up above.
Well, she seems to, because Loyola Chicago is defying all the odds.
My gosh. I mean, the lowest seed, ties the lowest seed ever to make it to a Final Four, and I don't think they're done, which is really exciting.
Three buzzer beaters along the way.
I mean, for a total margin of 4 points over three wins.
Amazing.
Then they beat down Kansas State. They just had enough of these tight games and just stuck it to them. But she's, you know,
she's the secret sauce.
She's the secret sauce.
Mm.
She's the team chaplain, 98 years old. They have now trademarked a bobblehead, a Sister Jean bobblehead. 5,000 orders already. They won't be available until June.
Well,
I got to get
that takes a little luster. I mean, this is the moment to have one. You need to watch the game holding your bobblehead with
holding
Sister Jean.
Sister Jean. I wouldn't bet against that woman for anything. She's the most tweeted about person in the last week.
Amazing.
And she has over 20,500 stories that mention her.
And what, she's about 127 years old? Is that what you said?
She's a couple months away from being 99.
Amazing.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
I mean,
America's favorite nun.
America's favorite nun.
The most famous nun since Sally Field played the part, I'm sure.
There's none other.
All right. Well done. So we'll give, she's on the short list.
She's on the short list.
And I'm
going to
put her over Michelle Beadle. Now, Michelle Beadle will do a big deal with sport. Oh, well, it's a big role for her with ESPN. Sitting next to Mike Greenberg, who is obviously one of the preeminent all-time sports talk hosts. Mm-hmm. She'll be on television. Congrats to Michelle Beadle. Probably the most prominent female sports person now in sports media. I don't want to dismiss you, but it comes down to Michelle Beadle or Carla Dawson. Robert, your pick, Michelle or Carla?
Miss Carla.
Oh, Dawson.
Carla!
Robert. Woo! Yes!
But
we're
going to put Michelle Beadle second to Sister Jean.
Well, Michelle Beadle's impressive, and she's worked alongside Jalen Rose, you know, doing a lot of NBA big games and playoffs and things, and she's uber talented. $5 million uber talented.
Well, I just don't want ESPN to come and take you from us. So
it's going to cost you.
Yeah, we may not have $5 million on the bank.
We're a pair.
Oh, Robert's going with you.
He goes with me.
That's not fair.
I mean, hey, I'll take that.
You'll go with the $5 million package?
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right. The last name on the list, Brenda Tracy. Now, walk us through Brenda Tracy.
Oh, Brenda Tracy is great. And she is a rape survivor, speaker, but more than anything, a victim's advocate. She was, in 1998, a student at Oregon State, gang raped by four members of the football team. The then coach, Mike Riley, suspended the players one game and said they're good guys who made a bad choice. Pretty rough for someone who's been gang drugged and gang raped.
Yep.
So what she has done with this unfortunate situation is she now travels around the country and she's trying to change the culture for college football, which I love. And she goes and speaks to her first place to go was Nebraska with Coach Mike Riley. She faced him again. Mm-hmm. And do you know that Mike Riley apologized? Basically what she is doing, what she did with Mike Riley is what she just did with U of H this past weekend. She is really trying to create a partnership and get a culture change in football. So Major Applewhite is the coach. Major Applewhite just hired Kendall Briles, son of fired Baylor coach Art Briles, after, a terrible sex scandal there. She addressed the team. This is what she said to start it. Let's address this. I don't agree with Major Applewhite's decision to hire Kendall Briles. Now, let's also mention Kendall Briles is sitting in this room. But she says, but I can have a relationship with Coach Applewhite. I can still support him, and I can still support you all. We can agree to disagree agreeably. We could use more of that in this world. And that's what I love. I think what we're seeing with Brenda Tracy and Major Applewhite this weekend are that the two are setting an example of how you change a culture, even when you don't agree 100% of the time. She goes deep and she goes dark into the exact events that happened on that day. Football players are shocked. They are crying. But, they need to understand the gravity of it. But then she's just moving them towards change. And she's trying to get them to set what's called the, quote, set the expectations pledge, where the teammates are watching out for each other, are calling each other out if they see any of this behavior, domestic violence, sexual assault. She's asking coaches not to recruit players that have a history of this. She's really working on taking a very negative, awful situation and trying to change the entire culture of NCAA college football. Pretty cool.
She is Brenda Tracy.
Very impressive.
Very impressive. I'm going to put her as the woman of the week then.
All right, let's take it. I'll vote for her too.
And we'll rank Sister Jean number two, Michelle Beadle number three, and I guess our fourth place candidate is Stormy Daniels.
It's okay. At least she made the list, which is more than I can say.
Just one thing to say about Brenda, though, it is amazing. So many people could just sit back with their arms folded and say negative things and sling arrows from afar. She's going right into the fray and working on the problem and being very forthcoming and being a part of a solution.
And she's just asking for accountability from the top down. You can't go wrong with that.
All right, we're going to go to break. When we come back, we're going to shift gears and talk some MLB. We got Tom Verducci joining us. He's the senior writer for Sports Illustrated. And we're going to ask him about a competitive American League and including the outlook for the Astros, the Yankees, the Red Sox, and others when we return on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So joining us now here on SB Nation Radio is senior Sports Illustrated writer Tom Verducci. Tom, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I'd love to start out with a question about the Yankees. A-Rod actually came out this week and said, this Yankees roster is the most talented Yankees team he has ever seen. What do you think? Are they that good?
That's saying a lot when you think about that 1998 team.
Yep.
When, including the postseason, 125 games. I'm not going to put this team in that category, but I will tell you this. This is the most anticipated Yankees team in years, maybe even since the dynasty in the late 90s. I mean, their TV ratings for their spring training games were through the roof. And, of course, with Judge and Stanton in the lineup, I mean, it's must-see TV. They're an exciting team. They're going to hit a ton of home runs, score a lot of runs. But I'm not ready to start comparing them to the 98 Yankees. I like them a lot, but I still think the Houston Astros are actually the team to beat in the American League.
We love hearing that since we're based out of Houston.
We're sitting here in Houston with smiles on our faces.
Well, I was so impressed when I went through the Astros camp this spring. And listen, we all know they're a good team that won the World Series last year, but just picking up the vibe, the culture that they have going on there, it was almost like they didn't win last year. as hard as those guys were working and just the camaraderie that they have, and oh, by the way, they had Garrett Cole, I think it's going to have a huge year for them. So all systems go for the Astros. And I know it's been since those Yankees, since anybody repeated going back to the year 2000. But
no, has that been the longest stretch?
Capable. It is. It's the longest stretch since the World Series began in 1903. Of course, we have expanded playoffs, so there's more of a minefield to get through to win the World Series. But, it's been a lot of years since the team repeated as world champions.
Well, in sticking with Houston, Tom, I wanted to ask you, so yes, you mentioned the addition of Garrett Cole and the pitching staff, which is huge. We've now got a full year of Justin Verlander as well. This deep rotation, deep roster. What about A.J. Hinch? You know, this is a manager with a psychology degree from Stanford. How much credit? I don't think he gets enough credit because he's a below-the-radar type of guy. How much credit do you give in what he has been able to do with this team and what he can do next year to avoid, this coming season, to avoid any complacency from being the World Series champs?
Yeah, I give him a ton of credit. In fact, I think he's like the template of the modern manager, because there's so much data analytics in the game today. It's how you use the information, I think, that sets people apart. A lot of teams now have very similar information. Again, it's how you use that information. And with AJ, I think he's done a terrific job blending sort of the old school and the new school. Just as, for instance, I know the Astros 2-3 years ago, they had a ton of strikeouts in their lineup. And as a manager, and I know a lot of the analytics people say, you know, an out is an out, but AJ would watch these empty at-bats night after night. And they got rid of a lot of those players who had those high strikeout rates. And you saw the difference last year, and I think you saw it especially in the postseason. They did an incredible job going from the bottom of the pack to the top of the pack in terms of putting the ball in play. And I think that served them really well, especially when you go up against really good pitching in the postseason. And then you add in the fact that he understood that he had some great young players, not just some, but a lot of great young players, but it was missing something, that leadership in the clubhouse. So you had Beltran and Reddick and McCann, and some of those older veterans got in there, and I think they paved the way and showed some of those younger guys what it's like to go through the grind of a season and win those big games. So, yeah, you make a good point. I think he tends to go under the radar. He's not one really to sell himself and get out there in front of the public a whole lot. But I couldn't be more impressed with the job he's done with that team.
We are talking to senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Tom Verducci. Tom, I want to ask you about an article you just wrote. It was sort of fascinating to me on how hitters are hitting with different angles to get the ball up in the air, and you told the story of Will Myers. You know, I grew up watching hitters under the Charlie Lowell, Walt Reniac school, where they're always trying to hit line drives. It's striking to me, it's amazing to me, that here we are reinventing hitting yet again. Talk about what's happening across baseball with getting angles to put the ball in the air.
Well, it is amazing because it's changed so much, and it changed in such a short period of time. I just want to say the last 4 or at most 5 years. And it is interesting, using Will Myers as an example, you know, a lot of people were taught when you hit the batting cage, you know, in that tunnel that's surrounded by nets, hit the ball to the back net, hit a line drive, essentially, you know, right past the pitcher, a good hard line drive up the middle. Well, when you think about that, that is just a base hit, you know, that's a single. And the game now is, there's so much of a priority on power, and especially home runs, a record number hit last year, that you don't, why would you practice singles when the game really revolves around the long ball and home runs and slugging percentage? So a lot of the data has shown that getting the ball in the air is something that's much more preferential than on the ground. I think a lot of people knew that intuitively, but the numbers now are just too hard to ignore. And the other thing is talking to guys like J.D. Martinez and Justin Turner, guys who made changes in their swing, you know, once they got to the big leagues, which is not an easy thing to do, and they'll tell you that the way they were taught to hit, they now regard as flat wrong. You know, just swinging down on the baseball, you know, hit the ball on the ground, bring your hands to the baseball quickly. The game has certainly changed in how it's played, with the emphasis on power, but now especially how the game is taught. And then we have all these gurus around the country, whether they're with major league organizations or not, who sort of dissected the swing. And with the advances in slow motion video and data, they have a lot of knowledge to have evidence-based way of teaching. And this is, I think, I like to say we're just at the beginning of this change. I don't think this is a, you know, a little blip here or a short-term trend. A next generation of hitters is certainly coming up trying to hit the ball like Justin Turner or Will Myers and getting that ball up in the air.
And, Tom, you talk about changes. So Major League Baseball is for the first time, putting a mound limit, a limit on visits to the mound this season. And then the, yes, we will, oh, no, we won't, implementation of a pitch clock. Like, well, are we going to really see a difference in the game from 2017 to this new change in 2018? Is it going to make a difference?
I don't think the average fan will see any difference. You know, it's nice that they're making an effort to move the game along quickly, but this limit on mound visits is really not going to be anything noticeable to the average fan. I mean, it may save some time for the catchers who go out to the mound a lot.
Like the Gary Sanchez's, you know, of the world.
He's certainly one
Contreras,
of them.
Another one.
Sure, but you know, Major League Baseball said that there was about an average of 7 per game last year, so we're allowing 6. And, you know, I think it will actually create a few more problems, like just trying to define what is a mound visit. You know, when the shortstop walks halfway to the mound to talk to the pitcher about something, is that a mound visit? I'm not a big fan of it. It's not, because it's not going to make a big difference. Now, the pitch clock would make a huge difference. The game would look to anybody watching the game that it's moving faster. And that's what baseball has to get to, even if it's the appearance of baseball moving quicker. It's really not so much about the time of the game. It's actually the pace of the action. We're not there because the players don't want it. They've been pretty adamant that they don't want it. So right. I think this is sort of like putting the players on warning this year, like, hey, guys, let's move it along. And, you know, if you don't pick up the pace, then we'll have to really think seriously about the pitch clock.
We are talking to senior writer for Sports Illustrated, Tom Verducci. Tom, I want to ask you about the American League. When you look at the Yankees, Astros, we've talked about them, Indians, Red Sox, Angels, Twins, Mariners, you look up and down the American League, can you remember a time when it was this competitive? There are a bunch of quality teams in that American League, aren't there?
Yeah, there really are. I always look at trying to find some teams that can win 95 or more games, which is a really high bar.
Yep.
And you just rattled off a bunch of them. And I don't know that they all will, but they're all certainly capable of it. It's a really exciting time because of that. I think it's good to have these elite teams. You know, they have set the bar high. A lot of these teams have been in the playoffs the last couple of years, so it's not like they're big surprises here. But, you know, I think, to me, when I look at baseball, if I want to look at both leagues, I look at sort of a Super 7. You know, you've got the Red Sox and the Yankees. You get the Indians, the Astros. In the National League, you have the Nationals, the Cubs, and the Dodgers, who won their division the last 2 years. And I'd be surprised if anybody other than one of those 7 won the World Series. I think there's lots of jockeying for the wild card positions and the other 3 playoff spots. But as far as getting all the way through and winning the World Series, I'd have to think there's a good shot it's going to come from one of those Super 7.
Great way to frame it up, the Super 7. Tom Verducci, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate your being with us on SB Nation Radio.
Oh, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Take care. So one of the things that comes out of that interview is just the way the game of baseball has evolved. So interesting that now they're teaching hitters to hit up to get air underneath the ball.
The launch angle revolution.
The launch angle. But you see these evolutions over different sports. I mean, the NBA now has really moved away from the basket, long-range shots, the lack of the big man. The games do evolve over time.
And, you know, with this launch angle and these long balls, you know, the home run records being set, now pitchers have to adjust. You know, now you don't want to pitch low because they're whatever the physics of that angle are, you know, that's where they're hitting them. It's crazy. I loved what he said, though. My favorite takeaway from Tom Verducci, which everything he says is fantastic, that, you know, the changes that being made in Major League Baseball, it's not the time of the game, but the actual pace of the play, which is so true. Like, if you're sitting there and the game is moving at a great pace, you're not watching how long it's going on.
Right.
I love that.
Right. A 3-hour game could be a 3-hour game, but it's a whole lot better if there have been 180 pitches than just 92 pitches
right.
that last 3 hours because
yeah.
the pace is moving.
Great way to frame that.
All right, when we come back, we'll have the He Said, She Said segment here on SB Nation Radio.
is in the building.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
Yes, this is the highly anticipated, widely acclaimed He Said, She Said segment. And what we do here is we listen to sports luminaries across the globe, listen to what they say, and then offer our retort. So this one is interesting. This is right here in our backyard, Houston, Texas. This is going to be a he said from Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo. And he is talking about Michael Bennett. When Michael Bennett was here in Houston watching the Super Bowl, the Patriots and the Eagles, it was, I checked that, the Patriots and the Falcons. Patriots won.
Michael Bennett's now an Eagle. It's going to be their problem.
He is. But in that game, of course, the Patriots beat the Falcons. Martellius Bennett of the Patriots was on the winning side, and Michael Bennett wanted to get down onto the field to go celebrate with his brother. And along the way, he was knocking over somebody who was a paraplegic. So let's hear from Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo, who has now filed the charge against Michael Bennett.
I don't know about you, but you're morally corrupt when you put your hands on a little old lady in a little wheelchair. That is morally corrupt. I mean, morally bankrupt. Excuse me. He's morally bankrupt. There's no excuse for that. None. Zero.
He didn't pull any punches there.
No, he didn't pull any punches. I think that's tough. I mean, I'm pretty shocked by the harsh nature of his comments, honestly, because, and I'm not defending Michael Bennett. This is a 6'4", 270-pound man.
Yep.
And this woman was 66, a paraplegic, in a wheelchair. But there is no video. And, you know, Rusty Hardin, one of his defense attorneys, says, you know, the FBI doesn't have all the information yet. So I just think what's happened now to Michael Bennett, and it may turn out to be true, but he is definitely convicted in the court of public opinion after comments like that from the Houston police chief.
Now, at this moment, Michael Bennett has not responded, has he?
He has. He actually turned himself in today.
He turned himself in, but he made a claim, look, I'm innocent. I got to tell my story. You don't understand.
No. Oh, no. Not that he's, I know of. He has paid his $10,000 bail.
Yes.
But no, I don't think there's been a comment yet.
Right. Well, interesting times. Michael Bennett, the big pickup, the big addition to the Eagles defense this offseason.
That now is becoming the Eagles problem.
And now is an Eagles problem. He's indicted. He could end up going to jail. He could end up with a suspension from the league, as Roger Goodell often will suspend players for conduct unbecoming to the league, conduct that hurts the league's brand. So lots to come with Michael Bennett.
Yeah, and the strange thing about it, too, is it was an unpublicized incident that occurred 14 months ago.
Right.
There's just a lot of funny pieces that aren't totally put together.
Well, the last sort of interesting piece of that, yes, it happened 14 months ago. The trade took place. The Seahawks made the trade to the Eagles. What did the teams know and when did they know it? Mm-hmm. The Eagles have said they did not know. They were not aware of this incident in which was looming when the trade was made. Did Michael Bennett know? Did the Seahawks know? Did the Eagles know? Anyway, the trade went down and now Michael Bennett is an Eagle.
Mm-hmm. And facing third-degree felony charge. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, I'm going to let you tee up this next one. It's Coach Hamilton after his loss.
Gosh, so this was a tough Elite Eight matchup between Florida State and and Michigan, where Michigan is now going to the Final Four. But with 11 seconds left on the clock in the game, Florida State is down by four. And we're thinking, everyone, you know, Michigan State takes in the ball. We're waiting for the foul. No foul. Like the 11 seconds just
everybody
run
fouls
out
at that moment. Everybody fouls. 11 seconds, 4 points. The other team has the ball. You foul them, right?
I mean, right. That's when the 11 seconds takes 35 minutes to go through. And, you know, because at that point, you just don't know what's going to happen in those final seconds. So Dana Jacobson, CBS reporter, is talking to Lionel Hamilton directly after the game. And, you know, so let's give him some, this is raw emotion. This is a really tough loss. Florida State does lose this game. And you're going to hear he didn't take very kindly to her comments.
Coach, take me through the final seconds of this game. Why didn't you guys foul?
What are you talking about?
Down the stretch there, the end of the game, the final seconds, 11 seconds left on the clock.
Do you think that the game came down to the final seconds of the game?
I'm asking you, though, why that decision in the final seconds of the game?
The game was over.
You didn't think your guys could get back in it, put them on the line if they miss those shots?
I mean, but 15 seconds on the clock, what were we down?
Put them on the line, they miss a few shots. Coach, a four-point ball game, it's a question that the guys were asking at the end of our game. That's all I'm asking. It didn't come down to that in your mind.
I think her questions are fair. I think the way she handled it was
beautiful, actually.
Very professional.
And I want to also give it to Lionel Hamilton, too. He did not walk away from her in the interview. He was obviously incredibly disappointed. This was their first Elite Eight appearance in 25 years for Florida State. Big deal. He's a fantastic coach. I mean, she caught him immediately afterwards. And honestly, I think his kind of defiance was he really felt like he let his guys down. He loves his players and he loves this team. And I can really understand that. Just you just can't even go there to publicly admit I messed up.
Well, interestingly, in hour one, we had Coach Pat Kennedy on the air. He said absolutely everybody would call the foul then 99% of the time. But in the heat of the moment, they missed it. And you could sense that frustration from Coach Hamilton.
Yeah, Dana Jacobson handled it like a champ. I will say that then Lionel Hamilton came out the next day and he apologized, you know, public apology for his reaction in the interview. And, you know, I think that was the right thing to do. And he said she asked the right question. What I think he did with this apology was he was also able to divert the real question. Do you think you should have fouled? He still hasn't had to answer
that. He still has not said, yes, I wish we had fouled.
Right. He's avoiding that. But you know what? Hey, that's a rough loss. So. Right. I'd avoid that question, too.
Darn. Fair enough. Okay, we've gone from serious things like Michael Bennett and Coach Hamilton. We're going to have some fun now. Set us the next one with Sister Jean.
Oh, I love this. Okay, so we are about to go into a Sweet 16 matchup with the love of the nation, Loyola Chicago, with Sister Jean as the team chaplain, facing number 7 Nevada. Eric Musselman, who's done such a fabulous and friend of the show job with the program. And before the game, Sister Jean has an interview with Mariah Musselman, the 8-year-old daughter of Nevada head coach Eric Musselman, and they sit down for a little interview, and it is priceless.
Here's the sit-down of the week, Robert.
What do you think about the smash-up that's going down?
I think it's going to be very good, and I know that we're going to have to work hard, and of course Nevada's going to have to work hard against us, too. At least I feel that way. And you probably do, too. But I'm sure you're a little anxious about them. And I said to our team the other day, I think I'm more nervous than you are. I said, the team is very calm, and I like that.
Now, was that background music playing during their conversation or added later?
No, I think it was during.
It felt like it was during.
Do you love, though, that little Sister Jean has got a little hex on her with the... I bet that makes you anxious, doesn't it, little girl?
No, don't mess with Sister Jean.
Robert's Sister Jean.
Nodding compliantly.
Oh, yeah, do not mess with Sister Jean.
Definitely not. Mm-mm.
Well, and Mariah Musselman, she's the daughter of the coach, and what a great coach he is. So he's got a great daughter, and she's not afraid to talk to Sister Jean.
No, in fact, they had a little more in this conversation that's pretty darn cute. She's teaching Sister Jean something she hasn't learned in 98 years. Mariah, let's hear what you got for her.
You've gone viral. Do you know what that means?
You have to tell me.
Going viral means you're everywhere. You're on the TVs. You're on the internet.
I don't know how it all happened. Do you?
No.
No. It just all of a sudden it came and you hear your name lots of places and people say hello to you and people want your picture and all that kind of thing. So this is quite an experience for me.
What can you say?
Well, Sister Jean's gone viral, and she now knows what it means. Funny that an 8-year-old knows all about going viral, too.
And she was giggling through it. It was really pretty cute when she said she didn't know what it meant and all that. But, you know, the bottom line is you don't mess with Sister Jean. You just don't want to bet against her. She's powerful and in a good way. I like it.
This has been a magnificent ride for Sister Jean. I mean,
really has.
I mean, to come in as an underdog to Miami, come in as an underdog to Tennessee, to come in as an underdog to Nevada. Like, this has been a great ride for her. And the Ramblers.
Really has.
And the Ramblers. Do not forget the Ramblers.
And the ride's not over, Robert.
Yeah.
That's what's even more
the
exciting.
The road is to San Antonio at the Final Four.
I know. She's going to be in the state of Texas.
All right. We've got a few more minutes before we get a break. We've got 4 teams left in the Final Four.
There we go.
That's sort of redundant to say it that way.
I know, exactly.
But who are your picks?
Okay. So I've got, in the finals, I've got Loyola of Chicago with Villanova and Nova taking it.
Really?
Yep.
So you think Loyola is going to get past Michigan?
Yes.
Okay. Robert, what do you got?
For the sake of Sister Jean, I'm going to go Loyola, Chicago against Villanova. Same as Miss Carla Dawson. I think Villanova will take it, though. I mean, I want Loyola. That's a tongue twister for me.
It is a tongue twister.
To Chicago. I want those guys to win for Sister Jean and the Ramblers and the university, but I think Villanova, with the experience in the Final Four and the championship, I think they can take it.
And they've been there before.
They've been there before.
Yeah, 2 years ago winning the whole thing. So.
Game-winning shot in Houston. I remember that Final Four.
Oh, yeah, that was something with UNC. Just yes. Marcus Paige had made that incredible, what you thought was a game winner.
Exactly, and then Chris Jenkins came
just
down
put
the line and put the
dagger as like the clock expired.
Yes, ma'am.
That was the toughest loss. But then Roy Williams came back the next year and won it all with his guys.
Oh, yeah, yeah, of course.
So there we go. How about you, David? You're being awfully quiet.
Well, I guess I actually believe that the winner is going to be Michigan over Loyola.
Oh.
And I feel bad saying that in light of all the mojo for Sister
Jean.
It's
okay. You got to be honest.
And then I'm going to go contrarian. I'm going to say Kansas. I think what they did the other day to Duke showed a heck of a lot of resilience. I think Newman's outstanding.
Ooh,
I'm going to go with Kansas. So it's going to be Kansas and Michigan and ultimately Kansas on top.
I mean, it's tricky because you've got Bill Self that called his team soft. They turned it around. And then you've got Sister Jean on the other side who's lifting him up. But, you know, there's a Father Robert for Villanova. She is not soft.
Right. Oh, I didn't know about Father Robert.
Oh, yeah. Father Robert's been on. He's been giving Sister Jean the stage, but he's gonna surface at Villanova. Watch out for these Catholics.
All right. These Catholics are tough.
They're everywhere.
All right. I'm sitting next to a tough Catholic. Her name is Carla Dawson. She's the gloss. We got Robert behind the glass. When we come back, we're going to empty out the notebook. We're going to address all the topics we failed to hit in the 2 hours. You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
Headed to Texas to watch your team play, but don't know where to go for that pregame drink? Visit culturemap.com for all of the hottest spots in Houston, Austin, Dallas, Fort Worth, and San Antonio. From the most popular bars to those favorite dine-in gems, Culture Map has it all. Then before you leave town, why not visit some of the best places to shop or see some of the sights? Culture Map has extensive coverage on all the things to do in the city you're in. So check out culturemap.com. That's culturemap.com.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
All right, first a shout out to Robert, who is manning the board, filling in for Ron Culver this week.
Thank
and
you, guys.
And we've learned a lot, have we not, this time? I mean, this show, there's a lot that we've ground and we covered. Just to give a few highlights. I mean, the odds makers placing bets or setting the odds for Donald Trump versus Joe Biden in the great wrestling or boxing match to come.
Robert and I are taking Joe.
You guys both say
Team
Joe Biden. I say Donald Trump. You know what? The other thing I'll say on behalf of Donald Trump and why I think he might win is, boy, you put someone like him in a corner and no telling what kind of fighting he will do. This guy is scrappy.
Yeah, you box him into a corner and it's going to get ugly.
So, but you guys are going with Joe Biden over Donald Trump in the big fight to come. I do think, I'll just close that thought with, what they really, really, really should do is have a real fight, but do it for charity. The amount of money that could be raised for a Biden-Trump fight would be over the top.
I love that. And give it to a hashtag Me Too type of movement.
Okay.
Since this whole fight came over his groping comments with
we
women
can debate Trump's what charity it should be, but I'm telling you, they could make hay for
I
somebody
love that
for some great cause. One time, Biden and Trump. Let's do it for charity.
You're a mover and a shaker. You can get this.
I'll see what I can do.
All right.
The second thing I learned, speaking of movers and shakers, the woman of the week. We new feature that we did this week. We may not ever do it again, but we did it this week.
A lot of great women this week.
There were a lot of great women. Sister Jean, Stormy Daniels, Michelle Beadle, and Brenda Tracy. Although perhaps Stormy's not a great woman. She's a notable woman now in the
She's
news.
Notable.
Those are the first four. And we said the woman of the week should be Brenda Tracy, who has really become a great spokesperson for changing the culture in sports to make it more friendly for women.
Yeah, I love it. Love what she's doing. It, you know, leading the crusade against sexual assault. That's, you can't go wrong with that.
All right. And then we learned the dumbest move of the week, perhaps. Daron Harmon, the safety of the Patriots, trying to smuggle marijuana into Costa Rica.
Safety, not using safety. That's for sure.
I mean, some of these things you just can't imagine anybody would try to do.
I know. Kind of a no. That's an SMH moment.
So now he will face inevitable scrutiny from the NFL. He has legal scrutiny. He was sent back from Costa Rica. This is a tough week for both the Patriots and Daron Harmon.
That's true. Their struggles continue.
Struggles continue. Patriots, you picked, last thought that we've learned, you picked the Patriots as a team that have taken a step back in free agency. They don't have a tackle. Their left tackle, Nate Solder, is gone, and they don't have a solution.
You know, and they've got Edelman trying to come back from an ACL injury, which they don't know about the status of that. I mean, hopefully he will. And went ahead and let Amendola go to Miami. I'm just confused. But, you know, again, it's like you don't bet against Sister Jean. I don't bet against Bill Belichick either. And Seattle's the other one that they just seem like they're unloading, but they're not rebuilding. Kind of fascinating. I'm sure Russell Wilson is thrilled with these moves in Seattle.
Well, the only time the Patriots seem to lose is when pressure gets to Brady. I mean, even in the Super Bowl game, there was the strip sack, which turned the game. If you protect Tom Brady, the Patriots win. And now they've got a hole at left tackle, and they just lost Cameron Fleming, their right tackle in the Super Bowl, to the Cowboys. So they've got some big gaps to fill on the offensive line.
I mean, you've got your franchise behind center with number 12, and you let his two protectors go. I don't know. I'm sure Belichick's got a plan, but this is a head-scratcher.
Well, certainly the Patriots will be looking for offensive line help in the draft coming up soon. And next week, we should really dive deeply into the various mocks and what the outlook looks like for several teams. It'll be a fun,
and we'll have
fun
the championship
window.
Game going on in NCAA basketball.
While we are here.
Woo!
Yes, another Monday Night Delight. It will be the championship game. This has been The Boss and the Gloss, Robert Behind the Glass, SB Nation Radio.